You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff. With real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Hello and welcome to Fat Mascara. There you are, Jessica Matlin, making a very funny face at me.
Because
what's going on?
I don't know. I feel like our tech is not like, it's not ideal right now.
Okay, let's get in tech mode. Ready?
Yeah. Go. No, I don't know. I need a home studio, like a really nice one.
Can somebody sponsor us and like redo our houses and put home studios in? Because it seems like we're not going to be going to the Acast studio anytime soon.
No, I can't believe it's the end of the summer and here we are, still remote, but still going. And I feel like we've had a really good summer, all things considered, at least in Fat Mascara world. Fat Mascara world.
Me too. I am so excited that we got to connect with everybody even more, that we have more listeners on the show, like hearing their voices, great guests twice a week.
And I'm loving all of the nice notes and voice memos and emails you guys have been sending. So we do notice, we do read them, and I feel like we've gotten closer.
I really do too. And I know you guys are sick of us complaining about summer. So the good news is—
it's over.
We are entering the next season. And for that reason, actually, we meant to tell you last week, but here we are. We decided this week to do like a little refresh to recenter ourselves. So we don't have new interviews or new content this week other than our introductions and raise a wands at the end of both the Tuesday and Thursday episode. So we're just giving ourselves a breather to like get in place for our fall season with all of our new guests and lots of fun stuff. So we're rerunning two episodes. So today, Jess got to pick
to pick like an oldie but a goodie. And we didn't tell each other what we were picking, but today we like showed our hands. So I picked Dr. Andrew Giacono, author of The Park Avenue Face. This was from last April, I believe. Yes, April 2019. Feels like a million years ago. I loved this conversation so much. I believe he was the first plastic surgeon we ever had. And the reason why I brought him in, I remember I was so excited. As soon as I met him at Harper's Bazaar, I'd never met him before he came into Harper's Bazaar to promote his book. As soon as he left, I remember texting Jim being like, we have to have this guy on. We have an open plan, or we had an open plan environment at Bazaar. I was like screaming inappropriately with laughter when he came to the office. I will not repeat some of the things he said, but he gave me really good dirt on like, you know, or like some kind of like read between the lines kind of jokes about, you know, celebrities, what people do to their faces. He just had like a really kind of, just like a no filter, but kind of also this great discretion about the way he spoke too. I just feel like this was like, this is the kind of guy you want to be seated next to at a dinner. But he also had amazing real world advice about plastic surgery. I felt like he was very actually conservative about filler, very conservative about plastic surgery. He talked about why plastic surgery is like dating, which you have to listen if you want to know why. He also was really into subtlety. He thinks a lot of people look very overdone. He talked about how people look like Snapchat filters. And even if you, for plastic surgery is never, you might be thinking, listen, you know, Jessica, Jen, I'm not getting plastic surgery. I don't have tens of thousands of dollars to throw around. Why do I need to listen to somebody who has a book called The Park Avenue Face? That is not my lifestyle. He's just really engaging to listen to, and he has great perspective about the culture that we live in, which is so much about looks. So just give it a listen. I think he's a wonderful, charming guy, and also he's a wonderful guy too. He does a lot of charity work. So hang on, buckle up, and hang out with Dr. Giacono.
And then meet us afterwards, and we'll raise a wand.
All right. Can you believe that we've never had a plastic surgeon on Fat Mascara? I mean, that is crazy.
I can't believe it. And I am a co-host of Fat Mascara.
It's like 150 plus episodes. We've never had a surgeon, but we decided to go straight to the top for our first one. We have Dr. Andrew Ciccone, MD.FACS, right?
That's my title.
Yeah, I just looked at the book. and you're a New York City board certified plastic surgeon. And I mentioned the book. You also are the author of one of my favorite beauty books ever, The Park Avenue Face, which just came out this month.
Yeah, what? Just actually yesterday.
Ah, it congrats.
We just launched it. Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
It's a big day. It's a big week. Well, okay, so we've had a lot of derms on the show.
Sure.
And we've never had, as I mentioned, a plastic surgeon. So outside of like a hideous disaster, if someone's concerned about their facial appearance,
sure,
when should they see a plastic surgeon as opposed to a dermatologist?
Well, I mean, I think the truth is that plastic surgery, I think lots of times begins where dermatology ends, you know, because dermatologists do a fantastic job. You know, they do a lot of techniques and treatments to enhance your face.
Yeah.
You know, they do things for your skin. They can do laser resurfacing. They do facial tightening devices. They do injectable treatments. They do Botox and fillers. They can keep us looking great for a long time. Plastic surgeons do those treatments, but I think that plastic surgeons who are well-trained and dermatologists who are well-trained both do a great job at those things. But the problem is, obviously, is that there's certain things you can't do with just a needle or a non-surgical treatment. Obviously, some of those things the dermatologist would never see, things like a rhinoplasty, mm-hmm. or if somebody has, you know, a small or weak chin. You know, if you have bags under your eyes, there's only so much you can do with injectable treatments. So there are reasons why people seek out plastic surgery, but as we get older, and this is where a lot of what my book is about, is to educate people not just about the non-surgical treatments that both plastic surgeons and dermatologists do, but how do you make sure that you're doing the right things for yourself, not mm-hmm. overdoing it, and when do you really start thinking about doing something that's a little bit more aggressive?
So you mentioned, like, you know, when you start doing things that are more aggressive.
Sure.
I think a lot of people, you know, even some of our listeners, and we have a wide age range of listeners, but maybe think plastic surgery, this is not for me. This is like for much later in life, where this is...
If they don't want like a nose job or something, but they're thinking about like rejuvenation.
Yeah. You know? Or they might think plastic surgery, like, you know, is a little bit dated reference, but like Joan Rivers, you know what I mean?
It's well, of course. Well, who would want
aggro.
That, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Joan Rivers did.
Yeah. I mean, it's what evokes fear. You know, so, plastic surgery is synonymous with, you know, your least favorite looking celebrity.
That's really funny.
You know, everybody can think of a time when they watched like the Oscars or an award show where a celebrity came out looking like they had done something. They didn't look like themselves anymore, or they look very sculpted, artificial, tight, or their face just looks distorted and it's scary.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because, you know, the book is called The Park Avenue Face, and it's like, why, what's the Park Avenue Face?
Oh, you could just interview yourself here. Yeah. I like this. What is the Park Avenue
trained.
Face?
Yeah.
No, I thought a lot about this book and his reasons why I wrote it. But the thing is that the number one reason why I wrote this book is for the reason we were just discussing. Because people say to themselves, you know, maybe I'm looking to do something to enhance my appearance. But if all those celebrities, you know, all those people from Hollywood, people with money and access who can get the best care, don't look normal. Mm. Me as an average person out there, what chance do I have? So why would I go about even going on this journey? Because I don't want to look weird. I want to look like myself. I want to enhance my appearance, but I don't want to trade enhancing my appearance for looking like a plastic surgery victim. So the Park Avenue face is something that I deal with all the time, not because I practice on Park Avenue, but because my clients, especially those from New York, they prefer a different aesthetic. And what I mean is that they want to look like themselves. They want to look like themselves, but a better version. So
is that what the Park Avenue face is?
It kind of is, yeah. Okay. Because what I see this dichotomy. I see what I call the East Coast aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And the East Coast aesthetic is somebody who wants to maintain their personal signature. They want people to see them and not say, what happened? They want somebody to look at them and say, oh my God, you look amazing. What are you doing? You know, did you change your hair? Your skincare regimen must be better. You lost weight. You're exercising. Your life is good. You look vibrant. Mm. That's the Park Avenue face. That is the East Coast aesthetic. The West Coast aesthetic is the, you know, overfilled cheeks. It's the overly scooped out nose.
These are fighting words.
guards.
They are.
There's like a gang of East Coast surgeons and West Coast surgeons.
No, but here's the thing. There are people on the West Coast surgeons who do East Coast work, but it's synonymous with the West Coast because we see, you know, many celebrities on Instagram. We see, you know, B-list celebrities. We see A-list celebrities, and they're in our face. They're in our media, and that's what makes people afraid. So, unfortunately, the West Coast aesthetic, whether it's created by doctors or requested by those people from the West Coast, is the thing that people want to avoid.
Right. So it's not that our West Coast listeners want to look bad. It's more this like this Hollywood overdone kind of aesthetic.
It is. It's an aesthetic. And when you go to L.A., I mean, anybody's been to L.A. I'm sure you guys have been to L.A. Mm-hmm. You kind of walk the streets and you walk around and like people start to look like they're related because they have the same overinflated cheeks. Their lips look the same. Their nose looks the same. Everything looks the same, same, same. So I think there's an archetype that may be considered to be attractive in some fashion. Obviously it is because people get a lot of attention for looking that way.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of Instagram models who get, you know, they have tens of millions of followers and bazillions of likes and they have brands and all this stuff, but they kind of all look like each other.
They do, don't they?
They kind of do because if you can build that face and that body, then you get more attention from people. So it's something that some people aspire to, but my Park Avenue patients don't aspire to that look. Mm-hmm. So what I do in this book is I define this aesthetic. And again, I want to be very clear, is that I have plenty of my colleagues who I respect on the West Coast who do quote unquote East Coast work. Right. So it's not that doctors only in New York or on Park Avenue can create the East Coast aesthetic. It's that you have to be very clear what you want and you will need to make sure you seek out doctors who can create that kind of outcome for you. So what I do in the book is I go throughout the whole face. Whether it be your skin, whether it be non-surgical treatments, whether it be rejuvenating your eyes, you know, your face, your nose, whatever it is. And I talk about East Coast approaches. So all the things that create more of a normal look, even though it can be surgical, there are techniques and approaches that are more subdued. And then there are ones that are a little bit more West Coasty, let's call it. So if you're a West Coasty, you can use this book to try to figure out the West Coasty kind of procedures and seek them out. But what I do is I let the reader know because it's hard to know this as a person.
Yeah, we were going to ask you this later, but I think now is a good time. Say you are considering plastic surgery, and we'll get into when you should be or why you might be. Like, where's the first place you go other than reading your book? Like, where do you even start?
That's the problem because there's so much information out there, right? So what people do is that, you know, we all think we're like super researchers.
Jen was literally just talking about that.
The internet made us all think we're experts on everything.
Yeah, exactly. Because all I need is all I need is Google and like.
Yeah, I'm basically a plastic surgeon.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. All I need is my Google machine. I need a good, 10 to 12 hours of research and I'll be able to figure out the truth.
You can do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
DIY
plastic surgeon. But what winds up happening is that there's lots of conflicting messages out there. So unfortunately, you can get a lot of information, but depending upon the source, you may be getting a mixed messages. So that's why I wrote this book, because I have so many patients who come in with all those mixed messages and they're trying to figure out which end is up. But obviously, save that, you kind of have to be a private investigator.
What do people want you to do, just to piggyback off your question, off what you just said, do people ever come in your office and they say like, I want this, or I'm sure that I don't need this? Like what are people telling you that you have to kind of back them off the ledge?
Well, yeah. I mean, people have their own preconceived notions and that's when you have to educate them. And that's where, you know, that's why I spend a lot of time studying and doing what I do. So some people come in and they say, oh, I want a lip lift, whatever. That's just for example. And then they start to tell you what they want to achieve. And you're like, no, you don't want a lip lift. You don't want surgery at all. This would be a much better option for you. So people think that they figured it all out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to re-educate them. And sometimes you have to save people from themselves. Because unfortunately, you know, our industry, since it's elective, there's no perfect diagnosis, right? So if you have, you know, if you have a gallbladder that needs to come out, it's pretty obvious. They do a scan, the gallbladder is not good, you got to take it out. With us, sometimes doctors are more ready to just execute what people want, even if they're not necessarily a good candidate, because the patient requests it. So, you know, I talk more people out of surgery some days than discuss a surgical possibility for them.
Wow.
Because the fact that I realize where it's going. And once you educate people, people are smart. Once you give them the information, explain to them what this will do, how it may not work with their face. It doesn't work with their face because it's not balanced. It'll exaggerate their features, or maybe it's just not the right approach. And then you give them options. You know, there are non-surgical options. There are invasive options. Some things do this, some things do that. Once you show people pictures of it, this is what I do. I show you pictures of this procedure, what it does, with that procedure, what it does, this non-surgical thing. And then when you put that in front of people and you use some digital morphing of their own pictures, they kind of come around. They go, yeah, you know what? You're right. I don't like that. I like this better. And then you can really help them achieve their goals. And it's always best to do it in the least invasive way.
And do you want people to go around? And we always say, like, oh, get a second opinion. Do your research. Like, at Absolutely. What point is too many opinions too many opinions? Because say they come to you, then they go to another doctor, another, and all of a sudden they're like, yeah,
I think you need to do that. Because
you do?
Absolutely.
How many?
Ideally, I think that you should have 4 quality consults.
Wow. 4?
Yeah, 4.
Do you
4.
Pay for a consultation?
In my office, you do. Some doctors do them for... What I do is I charge people a consultation fee. But if they do go ahead with any treatment, whether it's non-surgical, surgical, it's applied towards
redeemable in products, right?
Whatever. Just so that the patient doesn't feel like they're losing something for the cost of the procedure, the cost of the consultation. But, you know, some doctors do non... You know, they don't charge for consults. But the reason why is that it's sort of like dating.
Uh-oh.
It's not just about getting the right information. You have to have chemistry with your surgeon because you're really starting a partnership.
That's interesting.
Well, it's true because you need to really trust that individual, not just their skill and their ability, but when you have questions and you're stressed, if you had a procedure, you need to feel comfortable enough to voice your opinions and feel like you can actually, you know, go to that person and be able to get answers that you need.
So if you're in the office and you're talking to them and they're giving you like, you're getting a bad vibe, is it okay to say no?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the book, I do go over a chapter where how it's best to select a plastic surgeon. And that's one of the things I say is, and this is one of the big like subheadings within that chapter, is to trust your gut. Because I think all of us have had experience in our life that have nothing to do with plastic surgery where we wanted to go in one direction, but something inside of us said, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of did it anyway because we just wanted so much to do it.
Haircuts.
Yeah. And then what happens is that afterwards, in hindsight, we go, you know what? I knew this wasn't going to be the right thing. I just had a sense about it, but I didn't listen.
Oh my gosh, I'm getting chills.
But that is definitely one of the key things that I think that people need to do. Do your research, gather your information, but you really need to have a certain amount of resonance with somebody.
So one of the things that you talk about in your book that I just think is so interesting is something called filler fatigue. Mm-hmm. What is filler fatigue?
Yeah.
Whoa, it just got serious.
It's time.
It took like a big,
it's time to talk about filler
it
fatigue.
It took like a half a gallon of water.
It's come to this. it kind of has. So the story is this. As we get older, I think everybody's experienced this, you know, we don't want to do anything that's major, but there's all these great little needles that can help us look better. And common places for people to get fillers, you know, for hollows and shadows under their eyes, our cheeks get a little deflated, we get sort of smile lines, marionette lines they're often called. That's a great name, huh?
I want that.
Yeah. How about the doctor term, nasolabial folds? It's like, what? But, you know, we get grooves, folds, and as things start to loosen, we get these kind of concavities and shadows in our face that are very harsh with lighting. We try to camouflage them with makeup. But when we start to progress, unfortunately, usually it starts somewhere in your mid to late 30s, and it just gets worse after that. It happens to everybody. People start doing fillers, and fillers are great because what they do is it's kind of like spackle. So you got some cracks, you got some dents, you spackle them closed where you put the filler in there, and it smooths things out, and it looks really great. But the problem is as we continue to age, we require more and more filler to get the same bang for our buck. So you go and you get a little filler when you're a little bit younger, it really pays dividends. But as you continue to age, the same amount of filler doesn't really get you what you want. And then as you start to add more and more filler, two things happen. One is that your face starts to look bigger. So a lot of filler in a face, it starts to make your face look round, wide, and it starts to distort your appearance. You know, I always let, you know, I kind of say this, and I shouldn't say this, but I will anyway because I know you guys will enjoy it. When people have too much, filler in their face, they start to look like, you know, the Real Housewives of wherever. You know, these women, a lot of the times on these TV shows, they have that kind of look where they haven't had plastic surgery, but they just look weird.
And they all say they haven't had work done on the reunion show.
Yeah. So what happens is that you start eating more and more, and then you start to lose a lot of your facial identity and characteristics. The face looks just asymmetric in a weird way. Even though things aren't falling, things are inflated. But the problem with that is that not only don't you look great, you kind of look like somebody who's older trying to look younger. And that happened, you know, and I'll dare go out there in a line, but, you know, people like Lindsay Lohan, who probably engaged, you know, fillers at a very young age, was looking much older than her years, even in her 20s.
So do you think that it's to start younger? I mean, I won't even talk about the preventative Botox thing right now because
I love preventative Botox. I think it's fantastic. I think it works wonderfully.
Okay. Yeah. But for fillers, thank you, because we do get a lot of differing opinions on that. But for fillers, if you start early, like let's say, like, you know, Lindsay allegedly may have, or someone like her younger, is it something that when you're older, you've kind of like the opposite of preventative, you kind of like messed up your face a bit?
Well, it does, because this is the thing. If fillers are done when it's necessary, because you can be young and require fillers, because some people, their faces kind of, they sag a little prematurely, or they get a little hollowed and out a little bit early. So using filler when diagnosed correctly, I don't think is a problem. The problem is when you start to add too much, you stretch the tissues out. So this is this thing in the body, it's called biologic creep. It sounds kind of weird.
God.
Yeah. So it's not.
What else?
This really
about.
Is like a horror movie. Yeah.
It is a little bit creepy. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that as we start to fill the tissues of our body, it stretches them out. That's a characteristic in plastic surgery that we use when we're doing things like breast reconstruction. Like if a woman has breast cancer, they put a balloon under the skin, it blows it up so that you can create more skin to put an implant in because the breast was taken away.
Well, aren't those called something?
Tissue expanders.
Yes.
Oh my God, filler acts like that?
Yes, it does. So when you inflate the tissues, you're stretching the skin out. It's just like gaining weight or being pregnant. So when you gain a lot of weight, you stretch the skin out. Sure. And then when you lose it, the skin sags more.
Do you see people with like floppy lips once their filler is like
wearing
what out?
Happens is the lip gets stretched out and it hangs over the upper teeth. So people have too much filler in the lip. If it goes away, now they stretch it out, it hangs more. So people have too much filler in their cheeks. As the filler dissipates, their face sags more. But then they see it sagging, and then the natural response is to go get more filler, because the concern is I don't want surgery, but I don't want to live with my face looking droopy. So they continue to put more and more filler. So what they're doing is they're stretching out their tissues at a more rapid rate than if they did anything at all.
It's a cycle.
Yeah. So filler I do a ton of people's facelifts in their mid-40s to late-40s. Not because they look so old, but because they've been engaging fillers excessively for too long. So that's now so they have no option but to do something like a mini facelift at a younger age. Whereas if they didn't do anything as aggressive, not do any fillers at all. Fillers are good tools. All these things are like tools in your tool belt.
Yeah.
It's very cliche to say, but too much of a good thing is not good for you. Mm-hmm. Everything in moderation. Doctors who are going to have your back and do things appropriately at the right time versus people who are out there who are profiteering, lots of med spas and places who don't have good medical supervision by good dermatologists or plastic surgeons will be more than happy to empty more vials of filler into your face because they make more dough, right?
Right.
Because you pay per vial. So if I can get you to do 6 vials, I made 6 times the amount of money than if I just put 1 vial in.
And that aesthetic that, you said calling it the West Coast aesthetic. Yeah. I see people here in New York who have that, just like you said, the West Coast doctors, some of them are New Yorkie or East Coast. The New York area, I see plenty of girls with the big cheeks and the little, chin. It's like a look.
I agree, and I don't think that it's pretty, and I think it's archetypal, and I think it looks like a Snapchat filter.
Yeah.
Right?
Not
doesn't
a good
it?
Way.
Yeah, not in a good way, because it's cute when it's like got a little nose on it and whiskers, but it's not good when those things aren't there.
Okay, everyone, guess what I did last night? I slept in my Honeylove bra. I don't think I've ever slept in a bra before. Usually, I am so excited to take off my bra at the end of the day, there would be no chance I would lay down in it. But Honeylove bras are that comfortable. And if you're someone who does like to sleep in a bra for a little extra support, I feel like the Honeylove crossover bra should be your sleeping bra. Did I just coin a thing, sleeping bra? I don't know if they'll approve of that, but I love the idea. Obviously, you're going to wear it out all the time too, because Honeylove's bras feature supportive bonding that eliminates the need for uncomfortable wires. Plus, they're made with a fabric that's so soft, it feels like a second skin. Is it spring cleaning time in your house? I know it is in mine. Clean out your bra drawer, get a few from Honeylove. They have the V-neck bra that's smooth and seamless and hardware-free. And then my personal favorite is the crossover bra with adjustable straps and a hook back closure. And of course, again, no underwire in that one either. The Honeylove supportive bonding lifts and supports without those uncomfortable wires. And while you're at it, why not pair your Honeylove bra with their matching shapewear or maybe a pair of their breathable, versatile leggings? Treat yourself to the best bras on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/mascara. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off. It's honeylove.com/mascara. And then after you purchase, they're going to ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we here at Fat Mascara sent you. Honeys, you deserve this. Again, that website is honeylove.com/mascara for 20% off.
All right, it's not often that we talk about supplements, but when we do, you know that we mean it, all right? Every day I do my skincare routine, and that is a cleanse. I moisturize. Of course, I pop a little antioxidant in there. I'll do a little serum underneath there. But what is non-negotiable for me lately is I take a supplement. That is my Ritual Hyacera. It's a wrinkle support skin supplement, which is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and improve skin smoothness. I'll take that.
I'll take it too. Ritual Hyacera is a once daily skin supplement. Jess said clinically proven. Let me give you the deets. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to a 3.6 time reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to placebo. Jess and I have been taking it more than 90 days. Let me tell you, it works. Plus, Ritual Hyacera has led to a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness in the same amount of times. It's rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. You don't always know if a supplement does that. Ritual also has industry-leading sustainability standards. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, love that, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. Plus, female-founded, B Corp, meaning they're holding themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of the people and our planet. You gotta love that.
Yes, okay. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust.
Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/mascara. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/mascara for 25% off. Okay, so there are some stories about my mom's life that I never get tired of hearing, and they're usually the ones in which she's trying to right some injustice and then ends up annoying the people in power, and I love that about her. Anyway, just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve memories and stories for the mother figure in your life or any of your family or chosen family. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. The prompts are really good. The kind of things we ask guests here at Fat Mascara, little things like, what's your favorite board game? And more important things like, what's the best advice you've ever gotten? Storyworth makes the writing process a breeze. All your loved one needs to do is respond to the email with a story, long or short, doesn't matter. You'll be emailed a copy of what they wrote, but they'll also be collected. So you'll get to enjoy the retelling of the stories and probably learn some new things in the process. Then, after that year of fun, Storyworth automatically compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. Even though I know some of my mom's best stories, I love that the weekly prompts are helping to uncover more details and that they'll be collected in one place for me to revisit and read through. Don't think I'm not going to pull this keepsake book out at our next family get together to share some of them. Listen, everyone loves Storyworth. It has more than 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, with millions of stories preserved since they were founded over 10 years ago. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/mascara. That's storyworth.com/mascara to save $10 on your first purchase.
mentioned the, a mini facelift, but like first before I ask you about facelifts, what's the youngest person you've done a facelift on?
Yeah, I've done plenty of people in their mid to late 30s who have over-engaged fillers at a very young age.
And so it's usually because of that, not because they were sagging at that age.
No.
Or, wow.
No, people don't sag at that age routinely. But if you've been doing fillers from your mid-20s, if say you didn't like your cheekbones and you just wanted higher cheekbones and you just kind of went for it and you went for it a little too much and for too many years,
yeah.
If you started doing that at 25, by the time you're 35, all that filler not only stretches your tissues out, it weighs your face down. Fillers have weight. They don't defy gravity. They like strapping two weights on your face.
Oh
so
my
over
God.
A decade
oh my
having
God,
too much filler.
Oh, I'm never getting filler again.
No. But again, here's the thing. Using the right amounts and doing them at the right time for the okay. right reasons will protect you. Doing it excessively and doing it too much too quickly will cause problems.
So if it's time, not maybe because of filler fatigue or maybe because you've done your work and your homework and you've consulted and you're really ready for, say, some type of facelift, what can people expect these days? Because I think we all think like, oh my God, you're going to be bloody and gross and swollen for 8 weeks and
sure.
you're going to have scars behind your ears and everybody's yeah. going to know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What does it entail these days?
Yeah, so that's definitely true for older style approaches to facelifting, which a lot of surgeons still do. So people do wind up, and I do lots of revision work, with large, long incisions that are hard to hide and that people will take forever to recover. So then there are newer techniques. So the techniques we use today, they usually use an incision that's much more hidden. It's literally about one-third or 70% less and shorter in length than a traditional facelift incision. We have better technology.
Where is it?
It goes inside this little thing called the tragus. So in front of our ear canal, mm-hmm. there's this little piece of cartilage that pokes out. That, mm-hmm. You know, some people get their tragus
pierced. Yeah.
So you make an incision inside that thing, not on the outside. So the incision's hidden. It goes around the earlobe
wow.
onto the back of the ear. So it's like this weird serpiginous S kind of shape.
So interesting.
So you can't see it. And we go down with telescopes. And what I don't do is I don't go under the skin layer. I go straight from the incision under the muscle layer. The reason why is if you're under the skin and you lift, then what happens is the skin looks very tight or pulled.
Right.
If you go under the deeper layer of the face, this is called a deep plane facelift.
It deep makes plane.
Deep plane.
When's yeah. the last time you did this?
I did two of them today.
Like yeah. a couple hours ago, you were digging around in someone's head.
I don't dig. I artistically.
Our producer's like out there like, oh my God. What is she saying?
I never dig. I gently separate the tissues and lift them.
But this sounds more invasive than, say, the old technique, is it?
No, it isn't.
How long does it take to heal?
So, and this is funny. So I'll shout somebody out here. I just did a facelift on somebody. She's the she put it on her story on Instagram. She's called the Eyebrow Doctor, mm-hmm. and she chronicled her recovery over 1 week. After a week, she was back at work with essentially no bruising or swelling. This technique it doesn't disrupt the blood supply to the face, so the face heals very quickly. And what we often do is we use what's called hyperbaric oxygen therapy. So I work with a couple of hyperbaric oxygen chambers. It sounds kind of futuristic. Michael
yeah.
Jackson, yes, used to sleep in one in his home many years ago.
Is it cold?
It's not cold at all. It's just you sit in, it's like a big cylindrical tube that's clear, like glass. So it's not like being in an MRI. It's big, you can see through it.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do is they put oxygen under high pressure, which makes the bruising, the swelling, and the healing happen at three times the rate it would normally.
You do your surgery within one of those?
No,
or you put them
I
in
do
it
the
afterwards?
Surgery before and immediately after the surgery, you get hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatments.
And okay. that really, so that's like better than any arnica patch ever.
Oh, yeah, we do that too, but this is like arnica on steroids. Okay,
oh, no wonder MJ.
So I have tons and tons and tons of patients who don't have time to recover. They're on television, they're celebrities, they're models, they're people who are
better. Can you tell us some of them?
Of course I can. We have NDAs with people.
Fine.
You know, nobody wants to acknowledge the facts. See, this is the
fine.
Thing. Celebrities who look unbelievable, who remain nameless, and you just see them, and you just smile from ear to ear because you're like, they just look amazing.
Wait.
Those people have had work.
Can you tell?
People in their late 40s, early 50s who are iconic and just look like they don't age, they're not aging because they've had help.
Okay, Jennifer. And
that makes
I'm not
me
saying
feel,
a word about that.
You have not commented on a single celebrity.
Yes.
But let's set the record straight. I don't want them coming for your license because people need their facelifts.
But can you tell watching those people walk by because you're an expert?
Can I tell?
If they've had the work done?
Yeah. I mean, walking, if I was in their presence, I absolutely could. But you have to understand something. A lot of the images we see of those people, there's very few of those images that are not retouched.
True, true.
You know, so when you look at their social media and you look at what's being put out there, it's been, you know, face-tuned like everybody else's.
I have to say, I feel really happy that you said the thing about, like, you know, if you see someone who looks amazing, like blow away in their late 40s plus, and maybe even before, you know, I think we all think, you know, it's avocados and diet and juice.
I'll call it what I call it, horseshit. Yeah. So the thing is that everybody, and it's interesting, I actually instruct my patients, because everybody has this fear that people are going to find out. Now, if you don't have any stigmata of surgery and you don't look weird or pulled or strange, people just look at you like confused. Because when you walk into work after a great procedure and you look seamless and you look youthful, people subscribe to, you know, oh my God, you had a great vacation. And if they dig further, people say, what are you doing? Your skin looks amazing. I tell people to say things like, you know what? I'm on this antioxidant diet.
Perpetuating this myth, though, that we all feel inferior because we don't age like Jennifer Aniston. Yeah,
but here's the thing. Unfortunately, we live in a very judgmental society. And unfortunately, revealing that you've had surgery, even though it may not look like plastic surgery, can be very detrimental to people. It can affect their careers. It affects their personal relationships. I have to tell you that I have people who they're best friends. They've lost best friends. They don't talk to their family members anymore because people have very strong judgments about plastic surgery. So even if you look normal, it can really disrupt people's lives.
Wait, can you talk a little bit more about that? That we weren't going to ask you about that, but I'm really curious because you're seeing patients who are in probably a world where this is not crazy because you are at the top of the
pile.
It costs
a lot of money.
But the thing is though, people don't like people. This is something I say all the time. Our friends and our family member and the people that are confidants want us to be okay, but they don't want us to be great. And I'm not, you know, and it's unfortunate, but it's human nature. I don't think that people are evil, but it's very hard for people when they see other people around them that they're their peers that are excelling, that they're excelling in their fitness, or they're excelling in their appearance, they're excelling in their financial aspects of their life. People don't like outliers. People want us, it makes us feel inferior, it makes us feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So if you give people the understanding of why that's the case and if it's related to plastic surgery, people love to out people. Oh, you know, Janie looks fantastic. The reason why is because she had a goddamn facelift. You know, and then what happens
Janie
is,
should be like, that's right, I do, and don't I look good?
And there are some people who have that bravado and have that personal power to do that, but there are a lot of people who will unfortunately feel very, very violated.
Aww.
And feel very sad, and then really, unfortunately, will even like wish they never told anybody that they had it done in the face of looking fantastic, normal, natural, and beautiful. So my suggestion is to most people is that it's better something that you keep to yourself because I've seen how it can really affect people in a very negative way. Now, not the way they look, obviously, but the way that other people deal with that information. And it's sad that it is that way, but that has been my experience, and I have done literally over 3,000 facelifts.
Wow.
So I've been down this road with so many people. So you see patterns of behavior. So for me, it's kind of silly, just like I talk people out of surgery. You know, it would be really beneficial for me to tell everybody to scream from the hills that I did their surgery.
Yeah.
But I usually tell patients that, you know, unless they have a strong opinion about it, that they should see how things are going and kind of keep it close to their chest.
Obviously, the spouse will know if they have a spouse, right?
Often, but I got to tell you, I've done plenty of plastic surgeries on women who don't tell their husbands, and I've done surgery on physicians' wives, and they wait for their husbands to go away to a medical convention for a week or two. Their husbands come back, often surgeons, and they don't tell them.
Wait, you did surgery on another plastic surgeon's wife?
Many.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. A lot of the plastic surgeons bring me their wives because they want me to do this, their wife's surgery, because I'm a specialist in facelifting.
Yeah.
But then other ones, they don't want their husband to do it, so then I do it. But by the time...
Have you ever done a husband whose wife is a plastic surgeon?
I've done one.
Interesting. So,
but that was from... That was
it's because she didn't want to operate on her husband?
No. She brought me her husband. Yeah. So I have a really funny story. So this is really cute. So I was lecturing in Singapore at a meeting teaching facelifting, and I met a plastic surgeon from Germany, and he says, you know, he saw me do life surgery and all this stuff. And he says, you know, I want you to do my wife's facelift. So he brought his wife to have me do her facelift. This is probably about 2 months ago. And I did her facelift. And he scrubbed for the surgery, which I do all the time. I have no problems with another plastic surgeon watching me do the procedure and assisting me. You know, they just, you know, hold things while I'm working. I did his wife's facelift, and she looked literally like 20 years younger right there. She was in her early 50s. He was in his late 50s. And as soon as she was wheeled out, he walked up and pulled me aside and he says, she looks amazing. She looks gorgeous. He goes, I want mine tomorrow.
So did you do it?
So the next morning, I came in at 4:30 in the morning. I put him before everybody else. I did his facelift. And then they left at a week. They got their hyperbaric oxygen treatments. They look stunning. And we needed to fill out paperwork for them because in the EU, they have facial recognition. And even though they look like themselves, they arguably look 20 years younger. So I had to get some extra paperwork filled out so they can go, you know, they were concerned that they were going to be held at the border and not be able to go back in because they didn't look, you know, they'd be like, how could you be a 58-year-old man? You look like you're 38 years old.
That's some Mission Impossible shit right there.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But I have a million stories like that.
Oh my gosh. You need to write a second book with just all your funny stories.
Yeah, I'm going to get there. But I think I'm going to write that closer to the end of my career.
Okay, we've talked about a lot of your patients. Have you ever turned away some patients?
Constantly, every day.
And is it because they want crazy, you know, overly filled everything?
Well, there's different reasons. One of the number one reasons why I turn people away is because they're not at a good phase in their life to think about plastic surgery. Mm. So, you know, people...
Psychologically?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and that doesn't mean they're cuckoo. What it means is that lots of times when people are going through big changes in their life, they want to get some plastic surgery done because they think it's going to improve the situation they're in. So often, you know, if people lose a job or they feel like, you know, they're aging and their career has been affected, they want to run in and get a facelift. Or if somebody, you know, unfortunately is in the middle of a divorce, and they, you know, they don't have the emotional preparedness to be able to engage. It's a very stressful time. And people make a lot of very snap judgments during those times that probably may
they
not
get
be
bangs in, yeah. when they shouldn't have bangs.
Like all these things. You know, it's like what do people do often when they first break up? The first thing is they get a haircut. Right? But this is the thing. Yeah. This is not a haircut. The hair doesn't grow back.
Yeah.
So, you know, making those kinds of snap judgments and decisions during a time of emotional turmoil is usually not in the person's best interest. So I'll tell people that and I will turn them away. That's one of the most common reasons. But other than that, it has to do with not being the right time or the right procedure. So just because somebody wants something doesn't mean they should have it. So somebody who's coming in for a facelift prematurely, doing surgery before it's necessary, doing anything when it's unnecessary will make things look less natural. So doing a facelift on somebody who really doesn't have anything to treat can do nothing but make them look distorted.
I love how this interview is turning into why not to go to Dr. Chacono, because my next question is sort of along those lines. How do we stay out of your office then? Like, how do we stay looking young if we don't want to get surgery till later or get injectables till later?
Yeah. Well,
Or we can't afford to do any of this, which is a lot of people.
Yeah, well, of course it is. Well, the first thing is that, this is the unfortunate truth. You know, we can all say, let's all feel comfortable with our aging appearance and just like, you know, embrace it, you know, be joyful about your aging. And it is a privilege to age, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody lives forever. You know, I'm getting to be a little bit older now. And what I find is that there's so many people that I went to college with, they're my frat brothers, I went to med school with, or they were contemporaries who aren't here anymore. So it is a gift to be able to age. But that doesn't mean we want to look older. And unfortunately, we're in a very high-pressure situation now because we have these high-resolution digital cameras. We know what we look like all the time. Our images get posted all over social media. You know, I just had a book launch party at Amaranth on Tuesday. And, you know, we had a photographer there. And I saw some very unflattering pictures from my profile with my neck down signing up. Absolutely. I'm like, oh my God, I need a neck lift.
Stop it.
Yeah, because my head was down. I was signing a book and I'm like, oh my God. I'm a plastic surgeon. I can't be walking around like this. But we are very hyper aware of our appearance and it is harder to age today than it was 30 years ago.
But what can we do
go ahead.
Oh, wait, sorry. No, it is harder to age. I was thinking about asking this, but I was like, maybe this is just me like with a leading question or projecting. Don't you feel like, I don't know what you meant, but I feel like the culture is way more like youth oriented or maybe just because I'm getting older.
Well, of course it is because, you know, from my perspective, 30 years ago, if you picked up a Vogue, Cosmo, or Elle, right? Mm-hmm. And you looked at the cover, you would never see somebody who's 17 years old gracing the cover.
Agree.
But today, it's almost, it can never be young enough.
There's going to be babies on the covers of the magazine. Yeah,
I mean, if we look at the progression, you know, supermodels were like in their late 20s and early 30s years ago. Mm-hmm. And today, they're like 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, they looked more, I know it was more like women, you know, and now it's like...
Yeah, they don't look like women. They look like kids, you mm-hmm. know? And they are kids, but we have this obsession with youth to the point where we're putting 17-year-olds out there in a hypersexual way, which is a little bit weird. I mean, I'm a dad. I have four kids, you know, and thinking about my daughter at 17 years old, you know, having it all out there on display, it mm-hmm. freaks me out a little bit. I don't know that it's healthy for our youth.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it raises the bar for what people see as being the archetype of what we aspire to. And I don't think that's fair or good, but it's something that we're all dealing with. And I think that we have to be, as a society, a little bit more cognizant of that and be a little bit more regulatory and understand how it affects women, how it affects men, and how it affects how we interact with each other, because it does. So, but save all that stuff. And, you know, that's like, you know, those are big ideas and it's really wonderful to talk about. But, you know, unfortunately, youth and sex sells, and that's what people put out there. Unfortunately, the more people click and the more people engage that kind of content, the more we feed it, mm-hmm. you know, industry.
Jen and I certainly know that firsthand.
Yeah. But if you want to try to minimize how much you're aging, the most important things are obvious, I think. You know, and these are things you will read over and over and over again. Sun exposure is a disaster. I think that we're doing a lot better than we ever did with that. I think that most people, men and women, would never go and do what I did when I was growing up, which is I used to put like baby oil and iodine on and I used to fry my skin or put like Copper Tone 2 on. I mean, I'm dating myself here, but putting on Copper Tone 4 was like, oh my God, how do you do that? Now today,
remember SPF 2? That's so cute. Like, can you imagine?
Do they even make this stuff anymore?
I remember my friend's like, I only like 8, and that was not that long ago.
Yeah. But the thing is, now people use better sunblocks. And I do take care of a lot of young clients, you know, who come in and they're coming in for skincare and other things that are engaged in that. So you have to protect your skin. You should be using Retin-A as part of your regimen or some kind of retinol, because that builds up the collagen and maintains the collagen layers of your skin. Sunblock and some form of vitamin A derivative, retinol or Retin-A, will pay huge dividends for you.
Do you use one?
Yeah, of course I do.
Like a prescription one?
Yeah, I use Retin-A. The Retin-A is the prescriptive type, so as you get older, you need something a little bit stronger. But retinol, which is readily available over the counter in many different products and preparations, is a wonderful way to be able to maintain your skin. So those are like pretty inexpensive and attainable ways of doing this. Now, the retinol is cheap, but it's definitely not the same as going to a dermatologist or a plastic surgeon and getting more prescriptive medications. So you do those things, and that'll pay huge dividends. I think once you get past that, you know, obviously, we don't want to gain and lose too much weight as we stretch our tissues out with that tissue expansion, maintaining your weight appropriately and avoiding, you know, toxic foods. And, you know, this is the truth. Gluten sucks. It tastes wonderful. It's toxic to our bodies.
You know, toxic? Those are strong words from a doctor.
Yeah, they are, though. And this is the thing. It's not like I don't like a bowl of pasta every once in a while.
Are you saying everybody? It's toxic to everybody?
Well, toxic, what I mean by toxic is...
I love a carb.
Yeah, I love carbs. And, you know, I it's harder and harder for me to eat them because as I eat them, I get bigger and bigger. And I got to run more and more to burn them off. But the truth is that there's lots of inflammatory properties to food, you know.
And to simple sugars.
Of course, to simple sugars and processed carbs. And, you know, it tastes really, really good. But you know what? There's a lot of truth. If you just eat good things, and we all know what to do. We learned this in grade school. What were you supposed to eat? Do eat fruits and vegetables and good produce. You know, you eat, you know, lean meats. I mean, everybody knows what to do. It just don't taste so good.
Yeah.
So the more alcohol we drink, the more tobacco we smoke and all those things, you know what? You can't be an angel all the time, but trying to minimize those things that definitely age your tissues and age your skin. There's no question that eating a lot of processed food and sugar, it definitely puts a toll on your skin. Any dermatologist will tell you.
I thought
Jen was looking at me like,
we both are
the worst.
Sheepish right now. We are both shrinking in our seats. Yeah. Like,
but
I was trying to hide.
Here's the thing.
Jen's a good eater. I eat a lot of like little, little treats.
I have pasta like four nights a week.
Me too.
But here's the thing.
I didn't think that was a lot.
I'm not saying that you have to be perfect all the time, but trying to be cognizant of these things and minimizing your exposure to them will definitely do better for you over the long haul, right, over decades of your life. But save those things. I think Botox.
Ancient grains. Yes, ancient grains. I like those too.
But Botox is definitely something that helps as you start to age, and usually in the early 30s and beyond, because you start to get folds.
He literally is like, gluten is toxic, but put this toxin in your face.
Yeah, unfortunately, because if you keep, the best way to think about your skin and Botox is think about wearing a leather coat. It's brand new, the leather is silky and smooth, but as you start to wear it and you look at the elbows where the folds over and over again, you fold the leather over and over again, you start to get cracks and wrinkles. So people who engage Botox, not when they're 21 years old, but as they start to see lines and wrinkles, it will prevent you from getting more characteristic lines in the upper third of the face, the forehead, the areas around the eyes, the crow's feet. If you maintain that, and you don't have to do Botox all the time, but even if you do it once a year, to minimize how much those muscles flex, will stop you from getting more wrinkles in your skin. So those are the main things that I think you do in the early phases of your life. Obviously, you continue to age. You put a little filler in. It is supportive, but you don't overdo it. You know, and then you let nature take its course.
You've given us a lot of advice.
Too much.
As you enter. No. We have to learn all of it. Okay, before you go, one last question. What's in your medicine cabinet right now? What do you use on your face?
So I use 0.05 tretinoin, which is Retin A. I use this thing. It's SkinCeuticals. It's vitamin C ferulic. I love it. So I put that on my skin every day. At nighttime, if I'm feeling dry, you know, this is going to be very, you know, I don't want to suggest that you need to use such a fancy moisturizer, but I have La Mer cream that I put on.
I knew it. Yeah.
Okay. And then the thing is that, most of these moisturizers, they're very equivalent, but there's something about the silky feel of that stuff.
And he just likes his La Mer.
Yeah, and I don't put it on all the time, but the thing, especially during the winter time, you know, when you're in New York and it's winter, your skin gets very dry and cracked.
But you can use
something as simple as Cetaphil. Cetaphil moisturizer is wonderful. It's very inexpensive, and it's something that's available at every pharmacy. So the main things you want to do is you want to exfoliate your skin. You want to support it with some kind of a vitamin A derivative. I use Retin A. You can use retinol. And I think you used to use some kind of antioxidant. The skin, the vitamin C, vitamin C E ferulic from SkinCeuticals is one of my favorite. But there are multiple preparations of these kinds of things. Something that's antioxidant protective, something to build the collagen layers, and something to moisturize the skin, and you're great.
You're great. Oh my God. You should be on TV. That was so
I think he has. He's been on like the Today Show and stuff.
Yeah. I used to have my own TV show. You know that?
What?
Well, it was, I do a lot of charitable surgery, you know,
yes.
So I do a lot of pro bono surgery on children, but I also do reconstructive surgery on women and children who are victims of domestic violence.
That is so fantastic.
Yeah,
that you do
so
that.
I had a TV show, thank you, on Discovery Channel. And this was probably, my God, probably 2008, 2009. It was only one season that we did it. You know, and what I did was, I do a lot of this work, but, you know, one of my friends was a TV producer, and he's like, you do this great work, you know, we should do a TV show about it. So then every episode I would do two people who had a story and unfortunately had facial disfigurement from domestic violence.
Oh, wow.
And we did that. And it was a very interesting process to be in a TV show, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
I'd rather be doing the work.
Yeah, and one of my good friends, and this is funny, one of my good friends is... Dr. Paul Nassif was on Botched.
Yes.
Yeah. So Dr. Paul Nassif, you know, we're very close. And he's, you know, the amount of time that you spend, and I knew I did it for one season, doing a television show, it actually makes it very difficult to be a surgeon and take care of your patients. So
stick to what you're good at.
Dr. Nassif is a great surgeon, and he's also... He's also really great on TV. I love watching him.
He is funny. But I'm lucky that we have you in the studio today. And thank you so much for all of the...
Thank you. I'm going to go have some pasta.
Yeah. You've given me a lot to think about.
Food for thought.
Also, I hope you're like working in 25 years because you might get a little ding-a-ling from me.
Yeah. Well, I do have 4 children. I have a lot of people to support in my life. So
we'll see you in 25 years.
Thank you. Wow. I'm going to be old.
You're sharp.
You don't want to come to me. I'll send you to one of my guys that I trained.
Okay. Thank you.
Jess, I am so glad you picked that interview. And when you picked it and you explained why, I was like, that is it. That's what makes a good podcast interview. It's somebody you would want to sit next to at like a dinner party. And for me, that's someone who is educating me at the same time they are entertaining me. And I loved it. Thank you for bringing that back into everybody's feed to this week.
I'm so glad you dug it.
Yeah. Okay, so do you want to raise a wand?
Yes. Oh, do I get to start?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm actually going to raise a wand to a brand that I have fallen in love with all over again. So I actually discovered the brand through a former podcast guest. Okay, it's all like, I'm keeping it all on the FM fam today. So Cora Organics, that is former podcast guest Miranda Kerr's brand. Now, before you start thinking, okay, she's a supermodel who like has her own brand, great. Cora Organics is the shit, all right? And I'm not like, I'm not a huge cursor. It is amazing. I got really back into Cora when I gave my friend Lucy a couple of Cora products that I had, little extra ones lying around. And then she like wrote me from like she was on a trip and she was like, this is amazing. And she's like not a huge beauty person. Like she's not gonna like, she's not someone who asks for product or like loves product. And she, if she loves something, she loves something and she'll like pay for it. She is going crazy for Cora. So I was like, well, I have Cora. I have got some Cora stuff that I can start using again. I like it too.
You were like, why did I give it away?
Yeah. I was like, wait a second. I like Cora. So I was like, you know what? I have Cora products too. So I have quite a few.
No, and you're like, Lucy, give it back.
Yes, I know. She's crazy about this face oil. There's a lot of Cora things she's loving.
And but what are you loving?
I'm crazy about a few things, but one of them that I like, it was like right next to my bed that I started like using again that now is almost empty is the Cora Enriched Body Lotion. It is so good. It smells so spa-like. I rub it all over my body like every single night, and I wasn't using body lotion all the time because I'm a lazy cow. It is so fantastic. It's got jojoba oil. Of course, it's organic because that's Miranda. She's very fancy like that. She's all into like healthy, organic, yada, yada. Macadamia oils, cocoa butter, noni extract. That's her whole thing. Remember the noni?
Oh, yeah. We should have replayed her interview. Oh, yes. And her accent was delightful. She just kept saying noni like that Australian accent. And I was like,
she was like ASMR. She was incredible.
I mean, her face is kind of mesmerizing too. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, she's absolutely a beautiful person. It's just wonderful. You massage it in, and even my husband said, like, I don't mean to be like too like, you know, TMI, but he said like my skin felt really soft and really nice. And I was like, oh, I have to keep using this.
Husband said my skin felt soft. That's the cutest thing you've ever said.
Yeah, like I feel like it was really, it made me feel good. So anyway, I love it. And I love that it's in a pump. So you could just like a lazy animal. I just like push it and like rub it on my body when I'm in bed. Like it's not,
you don't need to. There's a lot of animal metaphors. You're a cow. You're like, I like it. What else have we got?
I'm a
goat. When your hooves get dry.
But you know, it's not like a butter where you need to unscrew the top and then you have to like put your little paw in.
I completely know what you're talking about. I think that's great. That's
so what funny. Do you have?
A brand that like, in a similar sort of way, it was one of these brands that gets so much hype that I got one of the products and I was like, I know I have to try this, but you know, you don't go through cleansers that often. I was using another cleanser that was making me break out. I was like, quit that. And I reached for Jordan Samuel Skin. I've been hearing about this guy forever, right? Like, don't all the models love him?
Yes.
It was like one of those backstage brands that maybe 2 years ago, not even. And then like a couple other beauty editors were whispering about it. And it's just like in the know people. So yes. I was like, that it's the same way that happened with Vintner's Daughter, where I was like against it. And I was like, fine, I'll try it. And of course it was amazing because there's a reason these word of mouth products, like they're usually really pricey and they start out with a very clicky type of person who likes it. And I, for, you know, the egalitarian in me wants to not like it for that reason. But here I am. Praising Jordan Samuel and his lovely, the after show treatment cleanser. Oh my gosh, I just realized models, after show. Like, he does do all the models. So this cleanser is like, it's just such a nice experience because it's a gel that morphs into like a creamy oil. Mm. So I feel like I'm getting a little, Eric and I always say when we're eating like a fun snack that requires work, like for example, I'm trying to think of a good example. I don't know, eating shrimp like would be one, but that's a bad one for you.
Like lettuce rolls. Like,
We call it a snacktivity. And I love a snacktivity, like when the food is an action. Well, this is like a beautytivity. Like cleansing my face isn't just washing my face. I'm like having a little spa treatment because of like the formula that changes consistencies. And it has a lovely smell, gets off all the makeup. And it's sort of like, oh, I haven't been double cleansing with this because it's sort of, to me, the balm and the foam cleanser sort of in one. It doesn't really foam up, but it's lovely. And fine, all you people that told me about Jordan Samuel, you were right. It's great. So I'll put a link on the blog.
My favorite thing was when you said that you were against a beauty product. It wasn't just like you were going to pass. You were against.
No, because you know me. I'm such like anarchist.
A contrarian. You were not like burning down a Sephora. You were.
No. I just like if everybody else likes it, I want to not like it. But guess what, with the Jordan Samuel, you can't. You're going to, that bandwagon is going and you're getting on it and we're all getting on it. Okay. So we'll see you on Thursday. We got another fun interview and we'll meet you back here.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.